Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is Dr. William Hsu on intermittent fasting for fat loss, the best foods for longevity, and how to follow a fasting mimicking diet. Super enjoyable conversation. This is a topic that I've wanted to cover for quite a while on the podcast. And in today's episode, we go through how fasting, time-restricted eating, intermittent fasting in particular, can work for fat loss and some of the misconceptions around that, and how it's a tool for longevity and overall health and well-being. And we also talk about best foods for longevity, as I said, and how to use the fasting mimicking diet as opposed to traditional fasting. So if you struggle with just not eating food or just traditional water fast, there's an alternative method here. We touch on it at the beginning of the episode, and then we go deeper as we go through. So really enjoyable conversation. If you are interested in health and longevity, this is a must listen. I love this particular topic, and it's something I've been looking to cover on the podcast for ages. But the first half of this podcast, we talk on body composition. So intermittent fasting for fat loss, building muscle, how to balance out hormones, how to make yourself more metabolically flexible, more fat adapted, etc. So without further ado, here is today's podcast with Dr. William Hsu on intermittent fasting for fat loss, the best foods for longevity, and how to follow a fasting mimicking diet. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. William Hsu. Dr. Hsu was the VP of International Programs and Medical Director of the Asian Clinic at the Joslin Diabetes Center, a teaching and research affiliate of Harvard Medical School. After 20 years of a distinguished career as an endocrinologist, Dr. William Hsu joined L-Nutra in 2019 as a chief medical officer. In this role, Dr. Hsu leads the clinical development effort at L-Nutra, oversees the medical affairs department, and advances the education and adoption of fasting and fasting mimicking diet as an innovative tool to extend human health span. I'm looking forward to catching up on all things fasting, longevity, and health in general for today's episode. Dr. Hsu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. It's fantastic to be on your show.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I want to jump straight into the deep end with it. Let's talk about fasting, and more specifically, a fasting mimicking diet.
Yeah, Brian, I think, you know, fasting is such a seemingly a new concept to us, but it really has been around with us for thousands of years. If you recall, every culture, every religion has some sort of fasting aspect to it. And I think we're coming back to fasting partly because many of us have experiences with so-called diet, right? Every New Year, we have New Year resolution. We're on a diet, and then just remember how short-lasting they are. I think the inherently the challenge with fasting or with a diet is that it's difficult to do it every single day, although we know it to be good for us. Fasting, on the other hand, is a totally different concept, right? It's about it's not just about like what to eat and not what and not sort of what not to eat. Right. That's kind of the old argument right now. Fasting introduces a new idea that it's also about when to eat. And I think the component of that behavior really introduces sort of a breath of new air into the conversation around health and wellness.
What are some of the main misconceptions people have when it comes to fasting?
Well, a lot of people feel that you have to fast very long and therefore it's impossible to do. But it's actually nothing's further from the truth. One of the most common fasting regimen these days here in the U.S. and perhaps also in Europe is what's called time-restricted eating. And so by the you could tell from the name TRE, time-restricted eating, is simply limiting the number of hours you're eating to a certain hours, let's say 8 hours. And so the other 16 hours of the day, you would be fasting. And we call that 16-8, if you will. And it is not so hard. In fact, if you start with something called 12-12, right? 12 hours of eating, 12 hours of not eating, that's actually very doable. And you could even do it every day. And so think about our ancestors. Before the invention of refrigeration, before the invention of light bulbs, when the sun rises, we wake up, we eat. And when the sun sets, we stop eating. And that's in fact 12-12. And it's actually really easy to start on a fasting regimen. If you start with something with time-restricted eating of 12-12, you see how easy that is?
It's one of the very easy entry points into time-restricted eating. I've started time-restricted eating in 2018 and have been following it ever since. I normally do a 16-8 or a 10-14 based on training schedule, and I'm a massive fan. What's your thoughts, Dr. Hsu, with intermittent fasting, time-restricted eating, when it comes to fat loss in particular then? Because I know a lot of people will jump to fasting because it's a little bit of a trend at the minute. Now, I'm a fan based on the context of the individual, of course, but from your thoughts, what do you think about fasting in general for fat loss?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that fasting is really not about the total calories, although there could be some component of that. Let me explain. You know, fasting by definition is really a stress, right? So because when the cells inside your body do not see these nutrients that come and tell them to grow, they have to prepare for days or hours where there's no food. And so is that stress that causes the cell to respond differently. Now, so that the amount of stress is actually important. For example, in the religious fast that often lasts for days, it gives the body a different magnitude of stress than a time-restricted eating, which is much less stress. So the impact on the body is going to be somewhat different. Now, let's talk about then why, if it's not all about calories, then why would 12 hours of not eating or 16 hours not eating work? Well, part of it is behavior. What I mean by this is, if you look at modern day people like you and me, and Brian, I mean, we often don't eat out of hunger, if you think about it, right? And when we are with friends and we have a conversation, and what happens? We eat out of social circumstances. Sometimes when you watch TV, you eat. It's not because you're hungry, but you eat out of habits. Sometimes late into the night when we're stressed and we're working late into the night and our hormones in our body is telling us that we're hungry when in fact we don't need more calories. And sometimes that's emotional eating and that's stressful eating. And when we restrict our eating window to a certain number of hours, automatically you're cutting out some of those eating patterns that is outside of hunger. Right. And so, yes, to some extent, if you follow that logic, it is about calories. But as you extend the number of fasting from 12 hours to 14 hours and to 16 hours and 18 hours, you're really sort of revving up that pressure on the body, on the cells, and the cells has to do something about it. And so I often use an example. Let's say, you know, you know, if you remember your days in college, right, we're supposed to study every single day. When the professor tells us, you know, teaches us a lesson, we go home and we study every day. That's like the best way to study, right? Well, yes or no, right? The reality is most of us probably don't study every day. Well, yeah, well, I mean, I'll be honest with your audience here. When I was going through school, I often cram. I cram just right before the exams, and I cram for 4 or 5 days before the exams. I made it through. But what made me study? It was the stress. It was the stress of the exam. Now, we all knew that we ought to study every single day, but I couldn't. I mean, I was having too much fun, right? So cramming does work, and fasting almost works like that. It's a stress onto the body. So your body has to respond to it. And even though eating well and exercising every day and doing all the right thing every day is the best thing to do for your body, but sometimes we just need to cram a little bit, and fasting provides that stress as you were increasing that fasting window for 12 hours to 16 hours to 18 hours. And sometimes for a lot of the old time fasters, they do for a couple of days. As that stress increases, your body responds in a different way to that high stress. And we'll talk a little bit more later about those long fasts and how different they are to in terms of their impact on health and wellness.
Yeah, I definitely want to unpack that, because from a personal standpoint, I'm very interested in longevity and how fasting, the autophagy, that everything that comes alongside that. And I've gone 20 hours has been the longest I've fasted. I've done longer, but in terms of a strategic intentional 20-hour fast as long as I can go, but I do plan at some point to do a multi-day just to experiment with it. But you mentioned a very interesting point there, Dr. Shu, that I want to pick out for people, that eating out a habit at nighttime. So one of the reasons that I have a cutoff time of 6 p.m. when I stop eating, so my window of eating is normally within whatever time I start eating up until 6 p.m. because very few of us are craving salad and broccoli at 9 or 10 p.m. Like, you're going for potato chips, you're going for ice cream, you're going for chocolate. So if you have a fat loss goal, you're looking at those calorific foods, and that's consuming too many of that, too many calories over an extended period of time will lead to a fat increase. So you're kind of arming yourself with a tool to potentially support yourself with a fat loss goal. Also, if you skip a meal in the morning, breakfast, there's a chance that you're going to undereat on calories that day too. So although calories aren't the be all and end all, of course food choices matter. It's the stressing, the hormesis, all of that matters. It does play a big role, or it does help with fasting for fat loss. Just to park on that for a second, are there any metabolic or hormonal benefits that come with fasting then as well? Because you mentioned there the stressor, so the hormesis, the small amount of stress which can have a benefit on the body. But are there any other metabolic or hormonal benefits that tend to come with fasting, particularly when it comes to fat reduction?
Yeah, that's absolutely the great insight there. You know, with any low calorie diet, generally it's almost like a drippy faucet, right? You're reaching a negative energy balance, and so you're losing calories. Let's say if you say I'm going to be on a 1200 calorie diet every day, what happens is that your body is going to somehow make up the loss, right, by reducing your basal metabolic rate, and when it needs the calories, where is it going to get from? Well, it's going to get some from fats, but some of them are going to come from critical tissues such as muscles. And so when people lose weight through a low-calorie diet that's done over weeks, if not months, if you can do it, you are going to be losing some muscle mass. Now, fasting is really interesting because I said a little earlier that fasting, the main mechanism, how it impacts the health and wellness of an individual is through the stress. When you have stress, what happens? A lot of the catecholamines and even growth hormones increases. And growth hormone is going to maintain that lean body mass, that muscle mass that we all also critically need to maintain while we want to lose that fat. And so one of the great benefits of fasting, and I call it a beneficial side effect of fasting, is that you're going to preserve that lean body mass while losing the fat. Now, where do you lose the fat? Well, it's often the most metabolic active fats in the body, and that they're going to be the fats inside your tummy. These are what we call visceral fat, the fats inside surrounding the organs, inside the organs. Those are the fats that the body is going to tap into first, and while preserving the integrity and the amount of your lean body mass, such as muscle. That sounds like great news to me, losing the mid-trunk fat while preserving the muscle mass. And that's the benefit you get through fasting.
Love that. Again, so much here. And I want to jump into a fasting mimicking diet then, because this was something in the research for this podcast, Dr. Shu, that I kind of went down the rabbit hole with in terms of your research, Dr. Walter Longo's research, just kind of trying to educate myself on the particular area, because I was aware of fasting, how it works, again, very much into the longevity side from a personal interest. But talk about a fasting mimicking diet, because it's not exactly the same as something like intermittent fasting, where you just remove, you know, breakfast or lunch, or you skip and don't eat until later in the day. Talk about a fasting mimicking diet in particular and how it differs specifically from just not eating, because they are different from the research and from what I've been looking into. Talk to us through that.
Yeah. So, you know, think about sort of in terms of the income of a family. Let's say, you know, if my household doesn't see income, I don't make money for about a week or so. Okay, I might shift money from a bank account and use it and so on and so forth. But when my income doesn't show up for about a month, then I get worried, right? If my income does not show up for 3 months, I really have to change the way I spend money. I have to restructure. I have to reorganize all my financial plans, right? And so this is almost like fasting. Think about calorie intake as like income for a family. When the cells do not see calorie for a couple of hours, okay, it might respond in a minor manner, right? And that could be very helpful for fat loss. But if you're looking for some deep impact, the cells really must not see food for an extended period of time. And that's why the ancient wisdom of a lot of the cultures around the world have advocated long fasting. Some people call it prolonged fasting. Some people call it periodic fasting because it's not done daily, but it's done periodically. They definitely have a very different benefits to health. And let me explain. So as you go through a fasting through the first day of you know, let's say 24 hours without food, what do? You need some calories for all the cells to survive. The body actually taps into glycogen inside the liver, the muscles, as a source of your fuel. But that's a limited amount, right? And so once you burn them off in 24 hours, you begin to switch into a fat-burning mode. It's a full-time fat-burning mode starting about day two or so, day two, day three or so, depending on your body size. And that's why, you know, people start to experience a little bit of headache as they're switching from carbohydrate burning to fat burning, if you have experience with prolonged fast. But between the second and third day, something happens on the cellular level. The cells basically say, hey, there's no food coming in. So we got to restructure. And so what do the cells respond? How do they respond? They say, I'm going to take some of those older and more worn out parts of the cells. I'm going to get rid of it because I need to recycle for the components so I can make new ones. You see, that recycling process happens only when there's enough stress onto the body. And it's foreseeing that there's not going to be food coming in for an extended period of time. So it goes into that cellular recycling, also known as the process of autophagy. Autophagy, autophagy, meaning self-eating. And that process occurs about between the second and third day, and then it continues on for a couple of days. Now, that process is so important for every cell's renewal, the cellular rejuvenation, the cellular cleanse, that process, when it was fully described in 2016, Professor Otsumi in Japan won the Nobel Prize for that work on autophagy. And now we know when we fast for a couple of days, it affects every cells in the body. It's a universal stressor to the body. The brain cells have to respond to it. The heart cells, the fat cells, the muscle cells, every cell have to respond to the fact that there is no nutrients coming in. And that's sort of the mechanism why a long fast is different than a short fast. Now, you know, whenever I talk about this, I'm always afraid that your listeners might tune out of it right now because like, what? No eating for a couple of days, that's not for me. And I hope your listeners aren't turning away from this right now. But we are pragmatic. You know, I think Professor Longo at the University of California, realizing the benefits of a long fast, but also realizing how difficult it is for average men like me, you know, who are not heroes among us, to be able to take on a challenge of a 3-day, 5-day, or 10-day of water-only fast. And therefore, he invented something called the fasting mimicking diet. And I'm certainly happy to go into it a little bit later.
Yeah, the switching over from that fat burning mode, one something I've talked about on previous episodes of the podcast is there's a handful of people who listen who are into endurance events similar to me. They do ultramarathons, triathlon, etc. But that metabolic flexibility is really important if you're doing longer races, longer runs. And by fasting, it switches you into a more fat adapted state, which can be really, really helpful for athletes. I want to ask, as somebody who has definitely planning and has attempted a multi-day fast in the past, but it didn't go very well. What would be some of the tips that you'd offer someone who's struggling, who's decided, right, I want to do a 24, 48, 36 hour, you know, whatever fast in terms of a day, day and a half, 2 days, 3 days. What would be some of the tips you'd offer them? Something I struggled with a lot, which helped on my second attempt, was, you know, adding back in electrolytes. I found that I, for whatever reason, obviously just had an issue with electrolyte imbalance the first time I attempted it and was able to give myself a little bit more of a push the second time. But what would be some of the general tips you'd offer someone who wanted to do, you know, a 2-3 day fast, just experiment with it for, you know, potentially not necessarily fat loss reasons. I think time restricted eating is a better tool for that, but for autophagy reasons, for health reasons, for metabolic flexibility reasons, just to experiment themselves. What would be some of the tips, or what are some of the main pitfalls that stops people adhering to it? What would you recommend there, Dr. Shu?
It is such a good question, Jira. First of all, you know, do no harm. I will always say, check with your physician first to make sure that your health condition does not prevent you from engaging in a prolonged water-only fast. It is definitely not easy, but there are a couple of things I would remind our listeners. Number one, do it with somebody else. You know, don't do it alone. You'd be amazed having a buddy, a fasting buddy, to do it together with you, how easier the journey becomes. The worst situation is you're trying to fast and your other family members are eating a hamburger. That's just really difficult. Find somebody who wants to do it together with you, maybe your spouse, maybe your significant other, someone that, you know, that who lives with you, wanted to do this with you. I think it's gonna just, it's a huge emotional support during this journey. That's number one. Number two, I would say hydration. You lose about a quarter of your extracellular fluid through a fasting, you know, through a prolonged fasting for a couple of days. You're going to lose about a quarter of the water in your body. And so you got to drink lots of water. You know, hydration is really key. Otherwise, you get dizzy, you lose your balance. And so, yeah, you mentioned electrolytes. It could be helpful, especially if you're prone to that that electrolyte imbalance there. Number three, I think a lot of people experience some sort of headache initially if you've never been through a fasting regimen before. And that's because our body, we're so used to eating 24/7. I mean, whenever we're hungry, we just tap into food. We just eat. We almost never burn our own fat that's in our body. And that's why we keep gaining weight over time, right? So now this fasting over 24 hours forces you to burn that fat. So what does that mean? All of a sudden, the brain has to now get used to burning fats now, right? To using a different fuel for your brain. And it's not used to it, right? It's not, as the term you used, Brian, earlier, that metabolic flexibility, you don't have that yet. And so you're going to get headache. So hydration is really key there. But sometimes a lot of people don't realize it could be caffeine withdrawal, right? Because you may be a coffee drinker every single day. And during fast, you're not drinking coffee. So I would often allow a cup, no more than a cup of coffee in the morning a day, just to help you ease off that headache. Otherwise, you cannot go on. And now too much caffeine is also not good, because caffeine can activate PKA, protein kinase A, which is one of the nutrient sensors. And then so the body is going to see it as nutrients and it's not going to go into a fasting state. So these are some of the tips I often share with my audience.
This is definitely a prevalent, I might be wrong, but you can correct me, Dr. Shu, if I am, in the fitness industry, where if somebody's talking about fasting, they will have their cup of coffee and then they'll, you know, not eat a meal until 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the day. Is that still considered fasting? Am I right in saying that technically isn't, because of what you've mentioned? Because I know in the fitness industry in particular, just as a side note, people will say, well, you know, I don't eat any food, and they think food is the thing that counts as a intermittent fasting. But if you have a cup of coffee or you sip on some branched chain amino acids or essential amino acids, that technically breaks the fast, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really important point. So, you know, there are many things that trigger these nutrient sensors. The nutrient sensors are the key to whether the cells recognize it should be in a fasting state or rejuvenation state. The nutrient sensors are like the ears and eyes of the cells. They could tell when nutrient molecules are coming in. What are these? These are amino acids, these are sugar, carbohydrates, proteins, right? And so now coffee is interesting because, as I mentioned earlier, too much coffee is going to activate one of the nutrient sensors. So you don't want to have too much coffee. The coffee should be black. That means no sugar, no cream, no dairy products in there. as long as we think, you know, anywhere between maybe 90 to 140 milligrams of caffeine is probably okay. The threshold for triggering that nutrient sensor is going to ride above the 140 milligram of caffeine. So that's generally about an 8 ounce coffee, Starbucks coffee. You know, a cup is maybe, you know, a little less than 140 milligrams. So if you stay below that, you could probably alleviate the caffeine withdrawal at the same time, not trigger those nutrient sensors. So that's a critical point there.
So if you're taking coffee, and another question just to kind of piggyback on that, because I'm really curious myself as somebody who has gaps in my knowledge on this, would vitamins or taking supplementation in the morning then offset? If you're fasting for health, more so than fat loss, because I know fasting, for people listening to the podcast who are specific to fat loss, they can have the coffee, they can have their vitamins, like that's supporting their calories. And that's largely the main reason they're doing it. All the other stressors, et cetera, just a side benefit for the most part, knowing the audience of the podcast. But from somebody from my standpoint, who's very interested in the health side of it, and if my goal is autophagy, or if my goal is, you know, the hormesis and the stressor, is having that cup of coffee hindering me, or is having my supplements, my vitamins, my vitamin D, my omega-3s in the morning, does that offset it or does it matter?
You know, I think the vitamins, for the general purpose vitamins, I think they're probably okay. Now, we haven't tested every single vitamins. I think the clinical world, the scientific world has not tested every vitamins for its interaction with the nutrient sensors. But the general vitamins that we would typically see in the one a day kind of vitamins should be okay. I don't believe that there's any reason to believe they would trigger the mTORs or the PKA pathways and or IGF pathways. These are the known nutrient sensors. So I think that should be okay. But what you don't want to do is give amino acids. These amino acids or simple sugars are definitely triggers for these nutrient sensors. The cells, when they see them, they don't go into the fasting mode, regardless how, you know, sort of, you know, how pure they are. In fact, the more pure they are, the quicker the trigger they are. And so you definitely do not want it to put in powder, amino acid powders or pure sugars in your drinks or during the times of fasting, because they are going to trigger these nutrient sensors.
That's great advice. I'm so happy we got to talk through that for people, because I know myself and others listening are going to be in a similar point where they'll be wondering what they can and can't have if they want to do, you know, intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating in the morning in particular. I want to jump into longevity and something that you talk a lot about in your research. I've seen other interviews with you as well and listened to other interviews, Dr. Shu, where you talk about longevity. But can you explain the connection between longevity, nutrition, and fasting?
Yeah, it's actually quite amazing. You know, for a long time, we all often thought of not having food as something that's detrimental to our longevity, right? Think about all the great famines humanity has suffered, right? Every time it's people die. And that is true, because fasting is only a one side of the story. A lot of people think about all the benefits of fasting, but on the other hand, it's also the refeeding. What do you put back into the body afterwards, right? Because when you tear it down and you got to build it up, fasting, you're bringing the body off all the nutrients, you're causing regeneration or rejuvenation of the cells. But on the other hand, you also need to have refeeding during time period following the fasting, so the cells could be whole again. And so it's critically important that there is a good time period after fasting that's going to support the growth and health of the cells. So what is the intersection there? Well, we know, for example, that in laboratory, when you bring an animal into a laboratory conditions and you fast the animal periodically, now, granted, after each period, you're going to feed the animal, so you provide that refeeding period. What happens? You think it's going to die earlier? No, in fact, the opposite happens. They live 30% longer, and their longevity increases. And we see that all the way from yeast to fruit flies to, you know, laboratory rodents to mammals. The big question for us today is, what happens to humans? You know, when fasting is practiced regularly, can it help to increase our human longevity? And that's really the I use a big number, a billion-dollar question here. What we have observed in the blue zone regions of the world, these are regions where a lot of centenarians, people who live greater than 100 years old, lived, intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating or a frequent long fast due to religious reasons, cultural reasons, are very much part of their life story. And so there are reasons to believe that the same things we see in animals can be seen in humans when it's incorporated as part of their lifestyle, a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, so I do want to unpack through the blue zones for sure and talk through that. But I'm very curious because as soon as you said it, instantly a question popped up. What are the most important types of foods to focus on then with a refeed? You mentioned a refeed and fueling the body after a fast, you know, 1 day, 2 day, 3 day prolonged fast, etc. What would the focus be there? I think that's really interesting because should it be protein based? Should it be fat based? Should it be carbohydrate based? What would that look like in terms of a refeed?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I want your listeners really to focus on that as well. Equally important to the fasting period. If you think about, you know, after 3, 4, 5 days of not eating, all your cells have gone through the autophagy. They've gone through the recycling. Now they need new materials as building blocks. And so during that time, first of all, the body is so hungry. The cells are so hungry. It's going to pick up everything that you put in your mouth. So the first criteria should be, it should be clean food, meaning that you should not put in artificial ingredients in there. You should not have pesticides, herbicides that go into the body. So for that period of time, even though it's more expensive, try organic. I think it's really important that you have clean food during that period of time. So that's the quality of the food. Now let's talk about then what should be in there. What are the components? You're definitely going to need proteins to build. During fasting, you know, protein is one of the strongest signals for growth. And so now it's time to grow. Right after you've wrung that sponge dry, now it's going to soak up everything you put in there. But let that source of protein come from plant-based. Now we've seen many studies to show plant-based food is really good during this period of time. It's good for general health, and so pick great sources of plant-based protein. And carbohydrate is going to need it as a source of energy for sure. I mean, this is the time when you want to feed body. With the body with good, clean, nutritious food.
With the foods then, specific types of food, what would you recommend for foods that extend longevity? I know I've done a lot of reading myself around the blue zones in particular because I go through kind of phases of things that interest me and I'm like, I wonder if I can live to 100. I know there's a genetic component there as well. But when it comes to types of foods to focus on in terms of the best foods to extend longevity, what would be some of the recommendations you'd give for that?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, if you study these blue zone regions of the world, I think, you know, invariably you see fish, you know, seafood, fish. These are naturally sourced fish as a major component of the stables in the centenarians. So fish could be a great source, even though they're animal sourced rather than plant sourced. But we see that very often, and that could be a part of your diet for sure. You know, the legumes and the nuts really have been a great source, plant-based proteins and fats. And certainly olives, you know, in Europe have been so commonly used and so frequently used and associated with great sources of antioxidants and other great sources of nutrients. And so invariably, you know, the seafood, especially fish, the nuts, the olives, the legumes, have invariably been part of the dietary staples of the centenarians.
Yeah, that's something that I think is important to understand, that food choices definitely play a role. Like, I think with fasting, you've got your strategy or your tactics there, and then the foods that you incorporate. It's not this happens a little bit within the fitness industry as well. I know I'm pulling it back to that again, Dr. Shu, but where people will apply fasting either through for whatever reason, for a body composition change, and then they'll refeed with poor food. So I wanted to unpack what you said there about using nutrient-dense foods, using quote-unquote clean foods. I think that's really important. And then when it comes to the foods for longevity, incorporate them into your diet, especially the ones you like and can factor into a nutritional plan. Like if you're a fan of olives, if you're a fan of fish, if you're a fan of plants, I eat mostly plant-based now as well. And it's one of those things that if you're able to stick to it over a continuous period of time, you'll definitely potentially increase your odds of, you know, maybe not living past 100, as you know, I know it's with the blue zones, like that's such a disheartening thing when you realize how much of a genetic component there is to like the people that live past it. And I'm like, okay, I'll live to 90. I'm like, I'm good with that. But I'm curious, one of the things I definitely changed my mind about fasting in recent years, as I said, Dr. Shu, 2018 is when I started doing it first. And I don't think I'll ever go back now, because it's something that I enjoy. I prefer the digestion, how my digestion has improved, the mental clarity that comes with it. It fits into my schedule really well. I really, really enjoy it. But I was always I had this misconception that fasting and starvation were the same thing. Like, I think that's a big misconception. Like, fasting is strategic. Starving yourself is not. It's just random. What's something in the research that you've done over the last few years, Dr. Shu, that you've changed your mind about? Is there anything that you've done a 180 on when it comes to the research around fasting in particular?
I think from my clinical practice, my experience over 20 years, I realized that one of the biggest challenges that people have around fasting isn't the concept, it's the execution. Fasting is not easy, period. Especially when it's done beyond the time restricted eating. When you go into a day, 2 days, 3 days, and think about, you know, vacation, no one thinks about vacation without food, without good food, right? So how do you plan for a time where you go through fasting for a couple of days? And so while it sounds really good, and we know all the benefits in the brain, but as we go through it, man, it is not easy. And this is where the 180 degrees comes. You know, there's so many things that sound great, you know, but when you do it, it's just not easy to do. This is also the reason why I have joined El Nutra as the chief medical officer. In my journey, I've dealt with individuals that know they should do better, right? They should take care of themselves, but they're unable to. And so it would be totally a shame if we knew the benefits of fasting, but it's just we can't get ourselves to do it. The fasting mimicking diet is really born under that kind of understanding of just human behavior. Prolonged fasting, the long fasting greater than 2 days of water-only fast is not only beneficial, but it could also be unsafe for some people. Some people have conditions that does not put them into a good situation when they go on a fasting. And for many people, I would say probably 95%, if not 98% of the people, they just don't want to do a fasting for greater than a day or two. It's just too hard to do. Professor Voltolongo from University of Southern California, over 20 years have looked into the intersection between nutrition, fasting, and longevity, and realized that, hey, you know, even though our common definition of fasting is no food, but the cells look at it differently, because cells have these, as we mentioned a little earlier, these nutrient sensors that tell the cells whether they should be in growth mode or in a rejuvenation mode. And two are like the yin and yang of the cell. They have different functions. Growth, as we know, it's cellular replications. It's growing in size. Rejuvenation is about rest. It's about recycling of the older and worn out materials for something newer and healthier. And so that in times of stress, that is the trigger for that rejuvenation pathway to happen. Professor Longo, realizing the mechanism of how these nutrient sensors work, and say, hey, you know, what if we were able to provide nutrients just below the detection threshold of these nutrient sensors? In other words, let's say, you know, a threshold is this much, and we just give the nutrients right below that. So we can nourish the cells at the same time while we're keeping it at a fasting state. And that's really the birth of the fasting mimicking diet. This technology was actually funded by the National Institutes of Health and European Union for a total of more than $36 million over the last 20 years. I mean, this is really developed through the taxpayer money to help people to take on a fasting, even though they can have a little bit of nutrients to sustain them through that journey. So that really encapsulates sort of the spirit and the reason behind the fasting mimicking diet.
What would a kind of sample day or sample week look like on a fasting mimicking diet in terms of the caloric intake, the food choices? What would it look like in terms of a sample, just to kind of give people and listeners an idea?
Yeah. So the idea is that it's a 5-day meal plan. So the first day you would go into a transitional day, and it's not so bad. It's about 1,100 calories there, and predominantly plant-based food. All of it actually are plant-based, but fats would be a predominant component of that, all plant-based. And there's a little bit of protein, there's a little bit of carbohydrate, but as I mentioned earlier, not enough to trigger the nutrient sensors in the cells. And the second day, it's a sharp drop to about 770 calories for the remaining 2 to 5 days. It's scientifically designed to trick the body so that the body says, hey, there's no food coming in, when in fact there are nutrients to support you during that 5 days. The intention is to mitigate some of the burdens associated with water-only fast. Now, in this 5 days, the first day you're gonna burn the glycogens off your body. The second day you're gonna switch into fat burning. And hopefully between, you know, generally by our study, by second and third day, the autophagy is going to occur, and that's going to last for a couple of days. It's almost like, you know, that 5-day journey, it's almost like a seasonal cleanse, you know, cleaning. What I mean by this is, you know, around our home, what do? We clean the house maybe on the weekends. We vacuum a little bit. We tidy it up a bit every weekend. But we don't clean the curtains. We don't carpet clean, you know, shampoo the carpet every weekend, right? Often we wait until probably, you know, couple months every season. We do the deep cleaning. I think prolonged fasting, such as the 5-day fasting mimicking diet, is one of those situations where you get the body into a higher level of stress, although supported with these nutrients, but at the same time, does not trigger these nutrient sensors. So the cells, all the cells in the body go through that rejuvenation, go through that cellular autophagy, go through that cellular cleanse to get the junk out of the cells. And that's really, as part of a healthy lifestyle, together will contribute to a healthy aging process.
Yeah, I think that definitely, from what you're saying, would help with the execution where people struggle with. And just to distinguish for people listening, when you're talking health, longevity, it's nearly a different conversation to somebody who's listening to this podcast who has a long-term fat loss goal. Like, this might help it and support it and kind of kickstart things in terms of forming new habits, potentially making yourself more metabolically flexible, as we said, you know, getting your body used to tapping into stored fat. But it might not necessarily be the best long-term strategy for fat loss. But for health, for longevity, for a deep clean, I couldn't be a bigger fan. And I definitely think it's something I'm going to experiment with myself, because I have struggled with the traditional types of fasting for multi-days when I'm trying to work towards longevity, work towards health in general. For people listening, Dr. Xu, where would people find out more information about this diet? Is it online? Is it through the website? Where would you recommend people go to kind of further learn about the fasting mimicking diet in particular?
Yeah, and so for the company that stands behind all the research, and we've published, Professor Longo has published dozens of really high tier articles around these, and there are links on our website. The company is called L Nutra, and the website is L-Nutra.com. If you're interested in the commercial product that can make that fasting mimicking diet all in a 5-day structured meal plan, where you don't have to bring a shopping list and try to do it by yourself, you could go to prolongfmd.com. That's P-R-O LONFMD, which stands for fastingmimickingdiet.com.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will link up the product. I will link up the website on the show notes on briankeenfitness.com. I'll link them in the description for today's podcast, wherever you're listening, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Overcast, and you can click on through. Dr. Shu, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'm so glad I got to pick your brain on some personal things around fasting for me, because it's something I've struggled with, and I definitely feel armed and more confident to take a go and make another go at it. So I really appreciate your time from a personal standpoint, as well as a professional standpoint. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you so much again for coming on.
Brian, thanks so much. I hope the podcast is helpful for your listeners. And one word of advice, start today. Don't wait until January 1st.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Dr. Shu, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
There you have it, Dr. William Shu on intermittent fasting for fat loss, the best foods for longevity, and how to follow a fasting mimicking diet. Really enjoyable conversation, something I've been looking to cover for quite a while on the podcast, and I learned a lot myself, particularly around coffee, around vitamins for fasting, how to potentially use a fasting mimicking diet in place of traditional fasting. So I definitely got a lot from this episode. I hope you did too. As always, if you did, be sure to hit me up on Instagram, take a screenshot, pop it up in your stories, Brian_Keen_fitness. That's all from me from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday. We'll be right back.